Hello, I'm Gian, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 6th of November, 2024.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have myself, Gian, Christine, Angela, Liz, Ian, Helen, Simon, and of course, not forgetting Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have the latest Beacon update with Helen. We have an absolute blast for you in this week's Did You Know section with Roger and quiz with Mina. And we hear from David Smith, one of our members here at Beacon, who has part two of his review of one of his favourite all-time movies, Dracula, Prince of Darkness. With the weather still seemingly settled, is this the calm before the storm? We'll hear from Mina, who has the latest forecast for the week. Have frustrations started to bubble over as the struggles go on for our local football teams? We'll hear all the reaction to this week's football action in our Fan Zone feature. And with this week marking Engineering Day, we have some fascinating articles showcasing some feats of engineering from the past, present and future. Up first though, with a poignant week ahead across the Black Country and whole nation, we have a detailed guide covering the Armistice and Remembrance Day events across our region.
It's the time of year where the nation gathers together to pay their respects and remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice for their country. There will be parades, services and moments to reflect as cities and towns across the region mark Armistice Day on Sunday, November the 10th and Remembrance Day on Monday, November the 11th. It will see veterans, civic leaders, members of the Royal British Legion and the public gather in town squares, at cenotaphs and in front of council houses to honour armed forces members who have died in the line of duty. Members of the public will be able to line the streets to see the parades go by, and there will be opportunities to lay wreaths and pause for 2 minutes of silence, preceded by the last post and followed by a reveille. All council and civic leaders will be part of events across the region on both Sunday for Remembrance Day and Armistice Day on Saturday. As well as large-scale events at the National Memorial Arboretum in Alrus and the RAF Museum in Cosford, the following Armistice and Remembrance Day events will be an opportunity for people to come and pay their respects to those who fell in the service of their country.
Wolverhampton Remembrance Day Memorial Service. Once assembled in the square, parade will be joined by civic dignitaries for an outdoor service of remembrance, which is open to the public to watch. A 2 minute silence will take place at 11 a.m. before the laying of wreaths at the city's cenotaph. This will be followed by a service of remembrance inside St Peter's Church. Mayor of Wolverhampton, Councillor Linda Leach, said that she hoped as many people as possible will turn out to watch and participate in this year's event and remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice. She said, "At a time when our world often feels unstable and frightening, people value our armed forces more than ever. Remembrance Sunday is a way for us all to show our appreciation for those who have laid down their lives fighting for our freedom and to remember their valour and service. Wolverhampton has a proud tradition of coming together on this sacred day to honour the fallen, and I know that once again people will come out in their thousands to line the parade route and observe the service. I will be wearing my poppy with pride, and I would urge everyone to do the same and show their support for the work of the Royal British Legion. The public are advised city centre road closures will be in place on the morning of November 10th to enable the parade to take place. Wolfrunner Street will be closed from 8:30 a.m. until 11 a.m. The rest of the parade route will be closed to all traffic from 10:30 a.m. to allow the parade to march through safely, and will reopen at approximately 10:50 a.m.
Dudley Armistice and Remembrance Sunday Services. The Mayor of Dudley will pay tribute at Armistice and Remembrance Sunday Services in Dudley. On Sunday, November the 10th, a Remembrance Day service will take place at the Cenotaph in Ednam Road at 10:45 a.m. Current and ex-servicemen and women, along with families of the fallen and community groups, will parade from Vicar Street at approximately 10:20 a.m. and will move along High Street, Stone Street, Priory Street, Priory Road, and stop on Ednam Road by the Cenotaph. Uniformed organisations will meet on High Street from 10 a.m. Several road closures will be in place, including Priory Road, Ednam Road, New Street, Tower Street, Priory Street, Stone Street, St James's Road, Parsons Street, Marketplace, High Street, Wolverhampton Street, Union Street, and Vicar Street. On Monday, November the 11th, veterans will also join council staff, councillors, and members of the public at the First World War Clock Tower Memorial in Priory Street for the annual Armistice Day event to mark the end of the First World War. The service, which starts at 10:55 a.m, includes the laying of wreaths and a 2-minute silence. Priory Street will be closed for some of the morning, with alternative routes signposted throughout the closures. Councillor Hilary Bills, Mayor of Dudley, said, "Remembrance Sunday gives citizens of the borough the opportunity to pay their respects to all who have made this supreme sacrifice for their country. It is our chance to give thanks and pay tribute to all those who serve or who have served in the armed forces, and I would encourage everyone in the local community to join us. All are welcome to pay their respects by placing a poppy in the special Cross of Remembrance in the marketplace, which will be in place until Friday, November the 22nd.
Sandwell Armistice and Remembrance Day events. There will be 7 parades across Sandwell's 6 boroughs on Sunday, November the 10th, with representation from the West Midlands Lieutenancy for each parade. Parades will be followed by services, where a 2-minute silence will be observed at war memorials at 11 a.m. The events have been organised by the Royal British Legion, Sandwell Council staff, local community groups, with support from Sandwell Council. The services will take place in Great Bar at St Margaret's Church, Oldbury at Oldbury Civic Square, Rowley Regis at Poke Lane Cemetery, Smethwick at Smethwick Council House, Tipton at Victoria Park, Wensbury at Memorial Gardens, and West Bromwich at Dartmouth Park. The Mayor of Sandwell, Councillor Saida Khatoon, MBE, said, "Remembrance Sunday is a day to pay respect to all the men and women who have sacrificed their lives and remember all our armed forces and their families. I hope residents are able to attend one of the 7 services taking place in Sandwell. I would like to thank everyone who has helped organise Sandwell's remembrance parades and services. The day would not be possible without the dedication and support from the Royal British Legion, all our wonderful volunteers and our residents."
Stafford Armistice Day and Remembrance Day events. Services to commemorate the anniversary of the end of hostilities in the First World War will take place in Stafford across both days. Members of the armed forces will parade through Stafford Town Centre on November the 10th as part of the town's traditional remembrance commemorations. Remembrance Sunday will begin with a short service from 10:50 a.m, followed by wreath laying at the Borough War Memorial in the town's Victoria Square. Wreaths will then be laid at the County War Memorial before the parade by local servicemen and women. The march will pass through the Market Square, where a salute will be taken by the Borough Mayor, Councillor Frank James, civil dignitaries and members of the armed forces. Stafford Borough Council expects service personnel from the town's 22 and 16 Signal Regiment and Tactical Supply Wing of the RAF, as well as representatives from the Royal British Legion, Staffordshire ACF Corps of Drums and local cadets, to be part of the parade through the town centre. The following day, Monday the 11th of November, prayers and a 2-minute silence will be held as part of the act of remembrance in the Market Square from 10:50 a.m. The short ceremony will include a trumpeter playing the last post and reveille. Councillor James said he hoped local people and families would join him to mark such an important time in our history. He said, "This is an important day in our calendar, where we come together as a community and remember the sacrifices that brave men and women gave in conflicts across the world to keep us safe and protect the freedoms that we have today. And this must never be forgotten."
Warsaw Armistice and Remembrance Day events. In Warsaw, the Remembrance Day parade through the town centre and service at the Cenotaph in Bradford Place will take place on Sunday, November 10th. Residents can come along and watch the parade and take part in the service, which is attended by military veterans and armed forces representatives. The Mayor of Warsaw, Councillor Anthony Harris, will lead the Remembrance Day tributes on behalf of Warsaw Council. Reverend Canon Rob Hall, Vicar of St Paul's and St Luke's in Warsaw, will conduct the service of remembrance, and David Frost, CBE DL, Deputy Lieutenant of the West Midlands, will join others in laying a wreath. The Mayor of Warsaw, Councillor Anthony Harris, said, "Remembrance Sunday is an important time for us to come together to pay our respects as a community to those who have served in the armed forces. I am honoured to be taking part in the service in the town centre, and I hope many people in our communities will come along and attend one of the many services taking place across the borough." Councillor Adam Hicken, the Armed Forces Champion at Warsaw Council, said, "This year, Warsaw Council was awarded a silver award in the Ministry of Defence's Employer Recognition Scheme, DERS, for its commitment to service personnel and the armed forces. Today is a chance to remember and reflect as we pay tribute to their bravery and sacrifice." The parade will begin at 10:25 a.m. in Hatherton Road and Hatherton Street, and it will take a route past the Council House and down Lichfield Street, Lower Bridge Street, the Bridge and Bradford Street, arriving at the Cenotaph in Bradford Place at 10:35 a.m. Music will be provided by the Staffordshire Band, and the parade will feature representatives from 159 Theatre Support Company, Cheshire Regiment Association, Mercia Volunteers Regimental Association, Walsall Sea Cadets, Queen Mary's Grammar School Combined Cadet Force, and various uniformed youth organisations.
Waisley Hills Remembrance Day Memorial Service. Waisley Hills Cemetery and Crematorium is holding a special Remembrance Day Memorial Service on Monday, November the 11th. The event will take place at 11 a.m. when a poppy wreath will be laid on the grounds at the War Memorial. Between 10 a.m. and 12 noon, the crematorium's chapel will be open to enable visitors to have quiet moments of reflection. Those who attend will also be able to write letters or cards, which can be placed into the crematorium's Letters to Heaven Memorial Postbox. Cemetery and Crematorium Manager Claire Montague said, "Honouring lives of people who have passed on is a big part of what we do here, and it feels fitting that we should commemorate Remembrance Day. As a nation, it's important that we never forget those who gave their lives for us. Everyone is welcome to join us at our Open Chapel event to reflect on and remember those who fought and died in the armed forces. Hundreds of veterans, serving military personnel, reserves, cadets, and other organizations will march through Wolverhampton City Centre on Remembrance Sunday. The parade steps off from Wolfruna Street at 10:30 a.m. and the public are encouraged to line the route. Led by the Pipe Band of West Midlands Fire Service, the parade will make its way into Prince's Square, right in Lichfield Street, right into Exchange Street, and into St. Peter's Square.
And the Military Wives Choir is to perform in Dudley as part of a 16-date national tour next year. Their show, Military Wives Choir, An Evening of Song, will take place at Dudley Town Hall on Friday, June 27th. The original choir was set up to help the wives and girlfriends of servicemen serving in Afghanistan express themselves through song. They shot to public prominence after appearing on conductor Gareth Malone's hit TV series, The Choir. Within a year, they were topping both the UK singles and album charts. There are now nearly 2,000 members of military wives' choirs in 70 countries worldwide. In 2020, the story of the original choir was made into a movie. Rupert Nolden, manager for Dudley Borough Hall, said, "We are delighted to be welcoming the Military Wives Choir to Dudley next year as part of a small national tour. The choir has really captured the hearts of the nation since its formation. They have performed at the opening of the Olympic Stadium for the Queen and scored a second number one album, Sing, with Gary Barlow and Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber. It promises to be a rousing, uplifting evening that will inspire and delight, and I would urge people to book quickly to avoid disappointment. To book tickets, go to boroughhalls.co.uk/military-wives-choir.
Up next, we hear from Helen, who of course has for us the Beacon update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from Beacon back with your weekly update. And yeah, it may be half term, but it's been another busy week at Beacon. So first up, attention all local choirs, whether you're a school choir, church choir or community group choir, bring your festive cheer to our Santa Run and make this event truly magical. We're looking for choir to fill West Park with Christmas carols and holiday tunes as our Santas dash by on December the 8th. It's a fantastic opportunity to showcase your talent and spread some Christmas spirit and be part of a local event that supports people with sight loss. Are you interested? Well, reach out to our fundraising manager, Sarah Dovey, on 01902 880111 or email inquiries@beaconvision.org. Let's make this Santa Run sing. Now, next, one of my favourite things, a huge thank you to everyone who donned their brightest outfits for our annual Bright for Sight Day. By shining a light on how bright colours and good contrast can help people to make the most of their sight, together you helped us raise over £1,300. From schools to community groups and workplaces, you helped us make the day brighter than ever before, and we so appreciate your support. Now, it's just recently been, I'm sure you've noticed, Halloween, and our Beacon shops went all out. People were spooked and amazed by our frightfully fabulous displays, including some creepy creations from Hales Owen and Blackwich. So, we're now done with Halloween, but if you're already thinking a bit about Christmas, well, why not pop in? Because I, for one, know our Sedgley shop has definitely got some Christmas stuff in there. And in fact, yeah, it's definitely beginning to look a lot like Christmas card season. Our fabulous Christmas cards are now on sale in Beacon shops, and Jared from our Sedgley store is already feeling festive as a photo we put on social media this week showed. You can grab a pack of 10 for just £1.50. I mean, that is less than your daily coffee. So pop in, say hi, and stock up on some Christmas cheer while supporting a great cause. That's it for this week. I'll be back again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Next up, we have another block of local news.
And shifts in the virtual world have allowed student paramedics in the West Midlands to become the first in the country to perfect their emergency driving using a virtual reality simulator. The learners have started using the tech alongside more traditional training to help them pass their emergency blue light driving course. The simulator allows drivers to tackle hazards they are likely to face once qualified, such as extreme weather or pedestrians in the road, trainers said. Instructor Russell Ames said, "These are scenarios that could happen while driving an ambulance, but we cannot stage them in a real-life setting. We want to ensure that they are given the chance to prepare for this so that they can respond to patients safely and continue to save lives," he added. The simulator is comprised of an ambulance dashboard with steering wheel, moving pedals and flashing lights. Computer screens mimic an ambulance windscreen and the simulator's seat moves to react to different scenarios. Our driver trainers are able to see how the students respond to these conditions while they are training and are able to advise and teach them about the correct way to handle each situation, Mr. Ames said. Each student has an hour to practice on the simulator to complement an intensive four-week course on the roads. Student paramedic Will said he had found it useful to practice what to do in the event of a burst tyre, overtaking vehicles and driving on the wrong side of the road. "It's really interesting to train with such advanced equipment," he said. "I hope it'll enable me to be a safe blue light driver." Mr. Ames said the simulator enhanced students' learning experiences and gave them an edge when they became fully operational.
Interpretation is a cornerstone of communication for deaf people who, without that real-time translation, may not be able to follow all that is being said. But deaf people do not only benefit from interpreters, some wish to themselves provide the service to deaf communities, assisting in environments and scenarios where otherwise communication may prove challenging. Now it is hoped a £600,000 research project, conducted in part by the University of Wolverhampton, will shift the world, allowing deaf people to receive training and boost employment opportunities in the field, and in turn, assist wider deaf communities to seek multiple professions. "It's quite nice to suddenly get a big lump of money," said Dr. Christopher Stone from the university, who will lead the three-year project alongside professors at the University of Toulouse and the University of Berlin. Part of the work will explore differences between the UK, France and Germany in how deaf people help others understand what is being translated. This research will probably influence our colleagues across Europe and potentially more broadly globally, said Dr. Stone, himself an interpreter and a hearing one. He conducted similar research for his PhD about 20 years ago and said what he expected to discover from the new project was that deaf people found it easier to understand deaf interpreters rather than those who can hear. Dr. Stone hopes the three-year research project will unlock opportunities for deaf communities and potentially inform policy globally. "What we're interested in is how has the profession developed in the UK and in France and Germany," Dr. Stone explained. "What does that tell us about the ways deaf people work as interpreters that are similar and different in different places?" Dr. Stone said that in the UK, interpreting of this type was generally more developed in the field of television, while in France, it appeared there was more development in healthcare settings. Germany's strength, he said, was interpretation in parliament and government. "Deaf people have always been involved in providing access for their own communities," he told the BBC. "One of the things that this research will do is to provide extra evidence and support for that. It's more likely that there will be opportunities for deaf interpreters and translators to receive training, employment, and be specifically targeted to do translations and interpretations rather than hearing professionals." But ambitions did not end there, he said. "The research is being conducted in Wolverhampton in collaboration with professors at the University of Toulouse and the University of Berlin. Dr. Stone explained that boosting opportunities for deaf people to interpret would continue to open doors for wider deaf communities. If a deaf person wants to run to be a politician, they need to know about politics, he said. If they want to be able to work in the theatre, they need to understand the arts. They want to go to things that happen in the mainstream, as well as things which happen within their own communities. Hopefully, it means we'll be able to teach better. Hopefully, it means we'll be able to influence policy at a national or maybe international level. The project is to begin in February, when the research assistants, who are deaf and interpreters, will be recruited. I think it should have impact. I think there'll be interesting findings, said Dr. Stone. Maybe not change the world, but definitely will shift the world a little bit.
Now, from the marvels of the virtual world to the struggles of everyday life, as Severn Trent water bills are expected to rise by 46% in the next 6 years. The water company was one of many that requested to hike consumer bills by even more than they originally requested, according to figures released by watchdog Ofwat last week. The request could see the average consumer bill in England and Wales rise by 40% between now and 2030, costing £615 per year. Severn Trent proposed a hike of 46% to £580, which is above the national average, but lower than the 80% hike proposed by Southern Water. But if you do believe you will struggle with bigger bills, there are ways to make it more affordable and reduce the cost. Severn Trent have shared information about their 5 affordability schemes that could help their customers save on the cost of their bills, following last week's budget report from the Labour government. These include the Big Difference Scheme. This plan can offer a reduction of water bills to eligible customers who are struggling to pay and who have a household income below £22,010. If your application is successful, the 12-month scheme will design a tailored payment plan. WaterSure, a scheme where eligible customers could see their bills capped if they have low income, a medical condition or large family. Get Water Fit. Use Severn Trent's calculator to see what water you're using and where you could make savings and help the environment. Single Occupier. If customers live alone and can't have a meter fitted, they could benefit from a lower tariff if they qualify. Customer Assistance Scheme. Severn Trent is also working in partnership with independent charity Auriga to support people with their financial needs, including debt advice. The company currently helps more than 300,000 households with their bills through a range of affordability schemes. From 2025, it is set to more than double the amount of households who might be eligible to receive financial help, with a new £575 million package of support, meaning around 1 in 7 customers across the Midlands could receive help with their bills between 2025 and 2030. Jude Burditt, Customer Director at Severn Trent, said, "Keeping bills low and affordable is always a priority, but we know that some people need help and we want them to know it's always there. It's why we were able to previously announce a huge investment in offering more financial support than ever, nearly doubling the number of people we can help. It's not one size fits all when it comes to our customers, so we have a range of schemes and help available, so they can get access to the help they need when they need it." Severn Trent's bills are currently the second lowest in England, some £29 below average. Ofwat is due to make a final decision on bills increase on December the 19th, with companies going to the negotiating table with regulators before then. The regulator wrote, "We will consider this additional expenditure request as part of our final determinations. The latest string of demands come amid public and political outcry over sewage spills in the privatised water industry, while companies' investors receive dividends and top executives get bonuses." A recent performance report by Ofwat showed that there has only been a 2% reduction in pollution since 2019, despite firms committing to cutting it by 30%. Labour has suggested sweeping new laws, which could see bosses face up to 2 years in jail if they obstruct regulators. But so far, nothing has come into force.
Now it's time to test your knowledge. Here come the quiz questions for this edition, and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question 1. Up to what year was it still law to have a bonfire each November the 5th? Question 2. Who was the first to host a firework display? Question 3. Where can you go to see Guy Fawkes Lantern? Question 4. In what year was the gunpowder plot? Question 5. How much gunpowder was to be used by Guy Fawkes? And finally, question 6. Which country made the world record firework? I will be back with you later in the show to give you all your answers. But for now, best of luck.
Thanks for those, Mina. I'll get my mind working on them right now. Up next, however, let's have another block of local news.
Plans to extend the West Midlands Metro tram extension to Briley Hill Town Centre appear to be back on track after the Chancellor announced a funding boost in the budget. The news comes 3 months after Transport for West Midlands announced that the tram extension was being cut back due to rising costs. It was announced in July that the opening of the final phase of the Wensbury-Dudley-Briley tramline was being shelved due to a lack of funding, but Chancellor Rachel Reeves appeared to suggest the scheme was back on track as she announced £1.3 billion extra transport funding in the budget. "We will deliver £1.3 billion of funding to improve connectivity in our city regions, like the Briley Hill Metro extension in the West Midlands," she announced. In July, it was announced that the opening of the first phase from Wensbury to Dudley Town Centre would be delayed by a year. "It was due to open by the end of this year, but will now not open until next year." The second phase from Dudley to the Waterfront Office Park was also delayed, while funding for the third section from the waterfront to the Maryhill Shopping Centre hung in the balance. It was decided to suspend the final stretch from the Maryhill Centre to Briley Hill.
From trams to trains, and a new group which aims to enhance Shifnal Station is looking for volunteers to get on board. The initiative is being launched to mark the 175th anniversary of the station being celebrated this November. Adam Cawley of Woods the Cleaners, who is helping to set up the group, said, "Shifnal Station is such an important facility for residents, connecting quickly with the wider West Midlands area and helping to make Shifnal such an attractive place to live. We want to ensure that the station is a welcoming entry point to the town, and a group of enthusiastic locals are keen to improve the look of the station to make it attractive for commuters and visitors. The formation of a Friends of Shifnal Station ties in really well with the 175th anniversary of the railway, and we would like more people to be involved. He said that the group would help to make the station more relevant to the locality and involve the local community and businesses with schemes like litter picking, reporting graffiti, and possibly developing arts projects, planting and landscaping. Sally Thiemans of Love Shifnal added, "Residents becoming station adopters is a great way to help these important gateways into our towns, and so we welcome this new initiative in Shifnal." Marilyn Higson of the Shifnal Historical Society said that a coffee morning would be held at Shifnal Fire Station on November 16th to mark 175 years since the opening of the railway in November 1849. It was in 1846 that an Act of Parliament authorised the Shrewsbury to Wolverhampton line, which would pass through the centre of Shifnal. Work was disrupted by the discovery of quicksand in Shifnal, problems with Oaken Gates Tunnel, and riots among the navvies building the line. However, when it opened, there were many spectators at every station as the first train travelled the line from Shrewsbury to Wolverhampton, comprising three engines pulling 38 carriages and stretching for a quarter of a mile. A band sitting on an open platform attached to the first carriage played throughout the whole journey. The line was taken over in 1985 by the Great Western Railway, and from the 1850s onwards, the station became a vital hub for Shifnal's economy. With inwards and outwards postal services for the whole district, the goods yards for local businesses, an animal market near the station in 1860s, and companies such as Edge and Sons Chainmakers, who had their own sidings at Bone Mill Bridge. Anyone interested in joining the Friends group should contact Sally at hello@loveshifnal.co.uk.
From trams to trains to automobiles, and something that celebrated its 65th birthday this week. Any ideas? Well, on November 2nd, 1959, the first leg of the M1 motorway was opened, running from Watford to Rugby, connecting the Midlands to the capital, 65 years ago. Today, the M1 is widely regarded as the North-South Gateway, now running for 193 miles from London to Leeds. A video released by the AA shows what it is like driving on the motorway today compared to 65 years ago. When it initially opened to traffic, the M1 had no speed limit, no crash barriers, and soft verges rather than the hard shoulders that are in place today. However, the M1's birthday is shaping up to be a less than happy one. To mark the anniversary of its opening, the AA surveyed over 7,000 drivers who use the road. The recovery service found that 60% of drivers thought that congestion on the M1 was poor, 47% said that litter was an issue, and 37% said the quality and number of the road service stations was poor. When it first opened, the AA said that 20,000 motorists used the road every day, which has now fallen to between 13,000 and 14,000 today. Speaking on the road's anniversary, Edmund King, AA president, said, "The M1 has been the backbone of British motoring for 65 years. Whilst it has its issues, people forget or don't realise what it was like before our major motorways were constructed. The construction of the M1 led to more freight moving to road, enabling easier north-to-south delivery routes. Major towns and cities were congested, and journey times were much higher than they are today." However, more than half of motorists said congestion on the M1 is a major issue for them. The M1 transformed mobility in the UK. It enabled families to visit relatives in far-flung parts of the country, which would have taken many more hours to get to, and led to the expansion of the motorway network we recognise today.
And talking of transformation, a Stourport-based recycling firm has teamed up with oil giant Castrol to develop a UK-first oil reuse pilot programme. The initiative by Slicko Recycling sees digital meters installed in waste oil tanks of customers in the automotive and industrial sectors to alert them when nearly full, before the waste oil is collected and recycled at the firm's specialist facility in Denmark. The company says as collection lorries will only visit when the tanks are at capacity, the scheme will maximise the amount of oil collected on each visit and reduce the costs associated with frequent collections, as well as simplifying the process for their customers. The partnership announcement comes after Slicker Recycling was awarded with a prestigious 2024 King's Award for Enterprise, recognising its strong working practices, growth in overseas trade, business excellence and sustainable development. Mark Olpin, Executive Chairman of Slicker Recycling, said the partnership deal between Slicker Recycling and Castrol would help to drive a more circular approach to used oil management in the UK. "We're extremely proud to partner with such a respected global brand like Castrol and support them in driving circularity," he said. "It's a hugely exciting scheme, which we believe is a first in the UK. The learnings will help inform how we collect and process used oil in a more sustainable way. By using digital tank telemetry technology, it offers a simplified end-to-end lubricant management system, meaning customers don't have to call us and only full loads will be collected. Essentially, it allows for a more efficient service and maximises the opportunity to collect much more lubricating oil, which will then be put back into circulation. The telemetry system will begin to be rolled out in November, with the first 250 units set to be delivered to customers UK-wide. So-called re-refined oils can be repurposed into new motor oil, lubricants, or fuel oil, which reduces the need for crude oil. Globally, the waste oil recycling industry is worth around £50 billion and is expected to grow by around 6.5% annually between 2024 and 2033. Vesna De Tomaso, CEO Castrol Europe, said, "We know our customers are focused on sustainability and are looking for ways to reduce waste and become more circular. This pilot will help us test a more circular lubricant life cycle with our customers."
Now then, those fascinating articles about some of our local successes will have got you all geared up to know that Engineering Day is marked annually on the 6th of November. The day aims to raise awareness of the importance of engineering as a way of solving problems and improving many aspects of life. Let's head over to Soundings contributor Lindsay with a cabin conversation about Engineering Day, helping to highlight this extremely interesting but often overlooked branch of science.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, my name is Lindsay. I started producing topical items during lockdown to keep my neighbours entertained. All the recordings are made inside my cosy cabin for that extra sense of calm. And naturally enough, I call them cabin conversations. I hope you enjoy them. Cabin conversations about Engineering Day. The Royal Academy of Engineering did a survey in 2019, which showed that just under half of all 11 to 19 year olds agreed that choosing a career to make a positive difference in the world was important. Yet engineering sciences had not even crossed their mind. To raise awareness, they launched Engineering Day on the 6th of November that same year, hoping to encourage better understanding of the roles of engineers, engineering sciences, and industries. Thinking outside the box does not necessarily mean brand new engineering systems or techniques. Sometimes it requires looking at what components are already available and using them in more inventive ways to make a difference to people's lives. None so historic an example as when the 1970 NASA Space Apollo 13 mission went wrong 56 hours after blastoff, and sent the famous, often misquoted communication, "Houston, we've had a problem." This referred to the explosion of one oxygen tank, which forced the ground engineers to improvise another method of creating carbon dioxide filters and generate more oxygen using only parts the astronauts possessed in their orbiting space capsule. Which brings to mind a well-known proverb, "Necessity is the mother of invention." Today, repurposing of inventions in different exploratory ways continues. Take, for instance, the seemingly frivolous electronic-engineered animatronic pets. Battery-powered dogs and cats which try to mimic Norman pet behaviour by wagging their tail or making sounds of barking or purring. These artificial pets are originally marketed for children's entertainment and now play a role in the medical field of psychology by calming dementia patients' everyday anxieties and reducing their keenly felt isolation and loneliness. Just some of the social effects of this degenerative disease. Glasgow University has gone one step further and began developing a robot assistance dog intended to aid those with impaired or sight loss. This artificial intelligence guide is best described as a small, skinny, robot-panelled, hairless dog about the size of an actual spaniel breed, but with a cumbersome round tub-like visual scanner placed on its back. The Glasgow researchers envision this supplementing someone with sight loss, be it with or without a live guide dog. Although the aspect of verbal interaction between visitor and robot dog could really benefit everyone attending indoor public spaces like exhibitions, museums, and service buildings such as hospitals to make the whole visit easier, more interactive, and supportive. As a bonus fact, Fairbanks Airport in Alaska is using a similar model artificial intelligence robot dog, the size of a Labrador, with interchangeable panels coloured either grey like a coyote or reddish-brown like a fox to mimic those natural predators. The robotic dog is programmed to patrol the airfield, scaring off migration birds, which endanger the flight safety of aircraft. Engineering, though, can be just as effective without being high-tech. In the mountainous areas of India, one engineer, Sonam Wangchuk, discovered that glacier ice does not melt so quickly if shaded. Unfortunately, also true, there are little shade options on a mountain. And so he devised an upward-pointing structure, covered it with gravity-fed water from a stream during winter and allowed it to freeze. During cultivation months, the artificially made ice stupa, so named after the similar-shaped Buddhist shrines, has a cleverly designed cone shape, slowly allowing ice to melt because of the minimal surface area exposed to warm temperatures and direct sunlight. The resulting steady flowing meltwater feeds the grain crops on the arid lowlands. This type of basic engineering design is vital in remote off-grid areas, as around 1.5 million people rely on mountain water for survival. Robotics, green eco-energy, natural disaster-proofing structures, aerospace programs, and software systems are all important components of modern-day engineering, which continues to develop and provide everyday living solutions to maintain independence in every country and beyond into the future. May you also be encouraged about engineering sustainability.
DNF Soundings.
Now then, find your comfy spot and grab a cuppa, or should that be bring your own booze, as it's time to hear from David Smith, one of our members here at Beacon, who gives us his take on one of his all-time favourite horror movies, Thanks for sharing, David. Introducing Dracula, Prince of Darkness, Part 2.
Shortly after, the murder man's wife comes looking for her husband. She screams as she sees the body hanging over the coffin. She then turns to see Dracula and stares in fear as he approaches her and bites her on the neck, making her a vampire. The next day, the two remaining in the group start looking for their friends and clove, and after having no luck, decide to leave the castle. They seek shelter in a small hut, and later that day, Charles tells his wife he's going back to the castle to make a further search and says he will be back before dark. He discovers the body of Alan in a trunk. Clove arrives at the hut and tells Diana her husband asked him to bring her to the castle. As soon as he steps over the threshold, he slams the door shut and locks her in. She looks towards a staircase to see the vampirized Helen, dressed in her night clothes, slowly walking down the stairs. Diana asks, "Where's Charles?" To which Helen says, "You don't need Charles." As the vampire is about to attack Diana, Dracula appears at the top of the stairs with blazing red eyes and runs down the stairs and grabs hold of Diana. Charles suddenly appears and shouts, "Let her go." Helen glides up to Charles and says, "Let me kiss you," and tries to bite him on the neck. Charles breaks free of her grip, then Dracula grabs Charles by the throat and hurls him to the floor. Charles then brandishes a sword from the wall and attempts to attack Dracula, who takes the sword from him and breaks it in two. Dracula then grabs Charles by the throat again and attempts to strangle him. Diana then breaks away from Helen, and as she does so, her crucifix touches Helen's arm, causing a cross to be burnt into her flesh. Realising the power a crucifix has, Diana holds it up to keep the vampire away. Charles then picks up the broken sword and makes a cross and forces it into Dracula's face, causing him to cower in fright. Using their crosses and keeping their eyes on the vampires, they back towards the door. The door slowly opens and Clove creeps up behind Charles and is about to stab him, but just in time, Diana turns round and warns Charles, who then attacks Clove with the sword, and they then make their escape in Dracula's carriage. The speeding coach goes out of control and crashes, knocking them both unconscious. When they come round, they find Father Shandor standing above them, who says, "I warned you not to go anywhere near the castle." They tell the priest all that has happened, and he explained to them that Clove murdered Alan in order to bring his master, Count Dracula, back to life by pouring blood over his remains. They are invited to stay at the monastery, and one night Diana sees Helen outside her window, who explains that everything is all right now. "I have gotten away from him." She opens the window to let her in and is bitten on the wrist. Diana is saved from being a vampire after Father Shandor burns the curse from her by pressing the glass of a lit lamp to the wound. Charles is worried that Dracula will gain access to the monastery, but Shandor tells him that a vampire can only gain access if invited in by someone who is already inside. Later, Dracula is invited in by a man who has been staying at the monastery and is under Dracula's spell. Helen is found hiding in the stables. The group of monks force her into a room containing a long table. Her face contorted with rage, she tries to bite them as they lay her out on the table, holding her down by her arms and legs. Shandor then says to Charles, "This is not your sister-in-law, she is dead. This is just a shell, possessed and corrupted by Dracula." Shandor then places a stake over the vampire's heart. He then is handed a hammer by one of the monks, and as the vampire arrives on the table, Shandor drives the stake into her heart. Blood spurts from the pierced heart, and as she dies, the vampiric features of her face change back into those of the Helen that Charles knew. To be continued next week.
Up next, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature. It's all yours, Roger. Take it away.
Hello again, everyone. I'm here again hoping to avoid the witch's curse on Halloween and getting ready for bonfire night. Oh, did you remember to change your clocks? I did, for the first time for years. Anyway, do you remember the rhyme about old Guy Fawkes? Remember, remember the 5th of November gunpowder treason and plot? Well, I'm sure some do, but here are a few things about bonfire night that I wasn't aware of. So here goes. I'll light the fuse and stand well back. Now then, did you know that? Up until 1959, it was actually illegal not to have a bonfire and burn Guy Fawkes' effigy on the 5th of November every year. However, during World War I and World War II, it was illegal to have any bonfires during the country's air raid precautions. The first person to host a firework display was our King Henry VII in 1486, on the occasion of his wedding, which joined the warring houses of York and Lancaster. Then, much later, Queen Elizabeth I was the first to honour the best firework maker in the country, giving him the title of Firemaster of England. And if you want to see the lantern that was actually being carried by Guy Fawkes when he was caught, then pop along to the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford, where it's displayed after being given to the city by Robert Hayward. And talk about security, the Houses of Parliament are regularly searched by the Yeomen of the Guard to make sure that there are no more attempts to blow it up. It's an essential tradition that has taken place ever since the infamous gunpowder plot of 1605 of Guy Fawkes and Company. And there were 2,500 kilos of gunpowder ready to be exploded under Parliament then. If it had been successful, the whole of Westminster Hall and Westminster Abbey would have been destroyed. Ironically, the cellar between the Parliament where the gunpowder was stashed was destroyed in a fire in 1834. And the most fireworks ever used was in Norway. 540,000 fireworks were used in a display which lasted 1.5 hours. But the prize for the biggest firework goes to Japan, who created a 460 kilo whopper in 2014. It created a huge aerial explosion of many colours, 80 metres in diameter. Well, there you go then. There's more to bonfire night than a few sparklers and a skyrocket, but with the prices these days, I think that's all I shall buy. On reflection though, I think I'll stick to looking at the neighbour's party through the window and stay nice and warm indoors with a jacket spud and a hot dog. Any road up them off. So I wish you well, keep warm, keep safe, and look after your pets on bonfire night. So bye for now, ta-ra a bit, ta-ra!
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, I hope you're all keeping well and safe. It's Mina here with your forecast for this week ahead. And looking at the forecast, it looks as though this relatively quiet and settled spell of weather shall still continue. At the moment, it's looking like there should be plenty of sunny spells later in the week, but with weaker seasonal rays, UV levels will keep down at low level. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:30 a.m. for the sunrise and 4:15 for the sunset. For Friday, 8th of November, it looks as though a veil of mist will cover the region early in the morning. But this should all clear relatively quickly, leading to a clear, cloudy and dry day for us all. Temperatures will continue to remain as expected for this time of year at 13 degrees. Moving on and into the weekend, it shall be more of the same, with early morning mist forecast for both Saturday 9th and Sunday 10th of November. Although unlike Friday, we should see some spells of sunshine breaking through on Saturday and possibly some drizzle on Sunday too. With a moderate breeze coming up from the south, temperatures will not be too bad at all, possibly peaking at around 15 degrees in places. Into next week, we shall start to see some changes setting in from Monday, 11th of November, and continue right through to Thursday, 14th of November. The misty mornings will remain, but lengthy spells of sunshine should be expected. The early morning haze should fizzle out rather quickly, giving way to some clear skies and unbroken sunshine. Temperatures will still feel fresh at around 13 degrees. Well, there we have it, a dry, settled spell with plenty of sunshine to welcome in the penultimate month of the year. Better late than never, I guess. Do take care, have a wonderful week, and enjoy the weather.
Cheers for that weather update, Mina. Now it's time to find out how our local football teams have been getting on.
Hi, it's Jamie, the Wolves fan. From this weekend's game, it was Wolves 2, Crystal Palace 2. It's starting to look now as if it's the end of the road for Gary O'Neill, and it's time to look at somebody like David Moyes, somebody who can bring more of that defensive strength to the club. Yeah, it's the end of the road for him. He has to go, because we haven't won. The last 10 games have brought us 7 defeats, 3 draws, no wins. I have never known as not to win a game within the first 10 games. Never. So, for me, it's the end of the road. He has to go. He's not good enough. He never has been good enough. You know, it could have been a bit of beginner's luck last season. It just shows the incompetence of the man. He just has to go. Back three, back four, back five, whatever. We have a way of playing at Wolves, which is, has always been a back three. And it's his fault. It's his fault, and he has to go. I mean, we've had a difficult start. Do you start experimenting with a four at the back system? I don't know. No, you don't. But you just keep that three, and you can get some points on the board. We would have had points on the board had he not fiddled about with the defensive system that we play. And now it's a case of he's got to go. Is the end of the road for him. He has to go. Whether he turns it around, I don't know. I don't think he will turn it around, but that's my opinion. Anyway, thank you very much. Bye.
Hi guys, it's Wolves superfan Fraser here, and I'd just like to discuss the game on Saturday, Wolves Crystal Palace. So, the first half, everybody was getting a bit annoyed. Nothing much was happening. I was infuriated and everyone was just getting a bit mad. So, the second half started and very quickly, Crystal Palace scored a goal because Stan Larsson headed the ball out of Saar's hands. But thankfully, Stan Larsson thought better of it and went up the other end and scored an amazing goal. So it's 1-1, but my man of the match, João Gomes, scored an amazing goal. The crowd were going absolutely crazy and I thought we were going to win. But unfortunately, Crystal Palace scored an equaliser from another corner. So remember me, my granddad's friend Pete, Sweary Pete, sorry. He was swearing a lot again. And when he heard me last blog, he said he's going to get his solicitor round to come and sue me for slander. And the funny thing is, good luck with that. I keep my wallet on me. All right, see you soon. Come on, me mummies!
Now, here come the quiz
answers.
And they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. Up to what year was it still law to have a bonfire each November the 5th? And the answer? 1959. Question 2. Who was the first to host a firework display? And the answer here is King Henry VII. Question 3. Where can you go to see Guy Fawkes' lantern? And the answer? The Ashmolene Museum in Oxford. Question 4. In what year was the gunpowder plot? And the answer here is 1605. Question 5. How much gunpowder was to be used by Guy Fawkes? And the answer here is 2,500 kilos. And finally, question 6. Which country made the world record firework? And the answer here is Japan. Did you get them all right? If not, not to worry, as I will be back next week with you all once again. Bye for now.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!